Chapter 3. System Transport Vessel Primogenia. Inner Terran Approaches. The Primogenia slid through the void towards Terra. Space became more crowded with every second. Ships and void stations filled the outer orbits. Even with tight control over which vessels could approach this close, there were hundreds moving to and from the planet. Many sat in void docks, regurgitating their cargoes into vast stores. Then there were the orbital plates. Old before unification, they were like cities cast from Terra and left to hang in the heavens. Around and between them floated strings of weapon platforms. Monitor craft moved amongst stations and cargo ships in shoals. Each monitor was small for a warship, but bristled with firepower equal to warp-capable craft many times its size. Imperial Fist's battle barges and cruisers stalked amongst the other craft like lions. And larger than all of them, hanging above Terra like a second moon, was the Phalanx. In all the Imperium, there was no warship larger or mightier. Even the Gloriana-class craft fell short of Rogal Dawn's fortress flagship. It held station on the edge of Terra's grasp, looking both inwards and outwards, the Guardian standing over the last gate. Past and through this throng, the Primogenia surged on. The monitor craft, locked to its side, transmitted clearance codes as it entered into Terra's outer control sphere. A last check with the pilot Carda on the Primogenia's bridge confirmed that all was well. Neither the monitor nor any of the other vessels noticed the shuttle that slipped from the cargo ship's rear launch bay. The first sign that anything was amiss came when the Primogenia needed to make its first turn to synchronize its course with the orbital dock. Signals passed from the dock to the Primogenia and its monitor craft when it failed to alter course. No response came from the pilot carder on the Primogenia's bridge. Alerts began to sound on the monitor craft. Assault troops began to run to the docking limb linked to the Primogenia. 5 seconds after the cargo ship failed to respond to the signals, warnings began to shrill through the orbital defenses. Alarms began to sound across the orbit of Terra. Gun platforms rotated to face the Primogenia. Commands flashed between the nearest warships. Vessels close by began to scatter. Chains of other ships queuing for the orbital docks broke apart. Those ships closing on the outer orbits cut their speed. Signals battered the Primogenia. It burned on, silent, falling towards Terra like a dagger. Beacon Tower 567 Beta, Gobi Tox Wastes, Terra. The tower sat on the edge of the hill line ahead of them, jutting up into the sunrise like a tooth. The strike team had dumped the crawler just over the horizon and run the rest, striding through the dark as it faded to day. The pace sent breath soaring in and out of Ms. Madra's lungs. The glands embedded close to her heart dumped pain suppressants into her blood. The 5 space marines had not slowed from the moment they had dropped out of the crawler. She could no longer tell which one was Fokron. They moved as one, speeding over the ground like oil. Ashul had peeled off a kilometer back, found a shooting point, and settled down to watch the tower. Wrapped in a camellia-lined shroud, staring down his rifle sight, he was the strike team's eyes as it ran through the last of the light.
500 meters out, no movement, came Ashul's voice in Miss Madra's ear. Large heat signatures inside. Machines, most likely. 20 human-sized signatures, none outside. If they have any sentries, they're heat-baffled.
Low likelihood,
Fokron's voice cut into the vox, growling with the echoes from the inside of his helm. Miss Madra ran on, feet dancing over the dust and broken rock at the bottom of the dry riverbed. The 5 armored warriors were 30 meters ahead of her. She could hear the low whir and buzz of their armor. Behind her, Incarnus was loping along, long arms swinging as he fought to keep up.
100 meters out, said Ashul. There are 3 on the roof now. They're lighting up low sticks.
Nice. The course cut by the dry riverbed curved away to the right. On her left, Ms. Madra saw the tower rise from the ground, just set back from the riverbank. A cliff of loose soil and rock marked the outside of the bend. Fokron and the other four warriors took it in a single bound. "The three on the roof still haven't seen you," said Ashul. She could see the tower clearly now. She had seen it before, of course, its shape and details familiar from picked captures. It was neither large nor impressive, just a square block of rockcrete and plasteel rising from the hills at the edge of the Tox Plateau. Gun barrels jutted from firing loops in its flanks. Crenellations ran around its top, and a single door was set in its side. It was just what it seemed, a worn and half-forgotten marker at the edge of desolation, worthless by almost all estimation. Almost all. Miss Madra scrambled up the bank. The five warriors were sprinting towards the door at the tower's base.
"They've heard you," called Ashul.
Miss Madra heard a cry from the tower top. Her pistols were in her hands. Incarnus was just cresting the riverbank behind her.
"Execute," said Fokron.
He was not even breathing hard. A sound like the flutter of wings rippled through the air above her. The cries from the top of the tower vanished. One of the five warriors fired. A white-hot line punched from his weapon's muzzle and struck the tower's door. The air screamed with heat. The door became a spray of molten metal. The warrior with the melter gun ran through the breach. The rest were just behind him. Miss Madra triggered the glands next to her heart with a single thought. Stims dumped into her blood as she sprinted towards the glowing wound of the door. Gunfire boomed within, rolling on and on like thunder. She came into the first chamber. Chunks of meat and ashes covered the walls and floors. Explosions flashed down the spiral staircase bolted to the wall. She was not looking at the corpses, or listening to the brief screams from above. Everyone in the tower needed to be dead within 10 seconds. Any more than that, and there was a chance of them sending a distress signal. That would not be happening, though. Her eyes scanned the walls and floor. The plans had not been specific on where the hatch would be.
"There,"
said Incarnus, panting as he came to a halt beside her. Her eyes followed the direction he was pointing and saw it. A square hatch sat flush with the floor, half covered by a canvas sleeping cot. She kicked the cot away and bent down. The lock was hidden behind a thin access panel. The cog's skull emblem of the Priests of Mars looked up at her from intermeshed wheels and gears. She swore. Incarnus looked over her shoulder, saw the lock, and added his own choice words.
"Melter charge?" she asked.
He moved past her, shaking his head as he crouched next to the lock.
"That would do too much damage to the conduit," he replied,
eyes flicking over the exposed lock.
"The intel didn't include the key to this."
He shook his head.
"I can crack it, but it's going to take 13 minutes.
"Too long,"
growled Fokron, as he stepped down the spiral stairs. He had pulled his helmet off, and his armour was flecked with drying blood.
"We have to be active in 9 minutes.
Incarnus shrank back as the warrior loomed above him.
"It's 5 centimetres of plasteel and ceramite. The only way through..."
Fokron punched down into the lock mechanism, closed his fist, and wrenched the hatch out of its setting. Chips of rockcrete fell from its frame as he tossed it aside.
"Proceed," growled Fokron.
Incarnus uncurled from where he had crouched, glanced up at the warrior's impassive face, then back at the ragged hole in the floor. He nodded and dropped into the space below. Miss Madra followed, unfastening the pouch that had sat across her back for the journey across the plateau. The shaft under the hatch dropped straight down into dust and darkness. She lit a stab light and swept the beam through the dark. Incarnus winced and cursed as the light found his face. She saw his pupils shrink from the size of coins to pinpricks.
"Cut the light,"
he hissed.
"I need to see,"
she said, panning the beam away from him.
"Not as much as I do,"
he muttered, but dropped his hands. They were crouched in a rockcrete-lined tube. Bunches of cables ran along the walls, which stretched beyond the reach of the light. Brass-cased machine blocks were bolted to the tunnel walls just below the access shaft. Strips of parchment hung from them, stirring in the sudden flow of air. Incarnus already had a bundle of tools out and was breaking the wax seals on the casings. Seconds later, he had the machine blocks open. Pulsing lights and whirring clockwork filled each of them. Incarnus paused,
eyes scanning the contents, fingers tapping on his chin.
Yes,
he said after a moment, and held out an open hand without looking around. Miss Madra placed the objects from her pack on his palm. There were three of them, each no larger than a bolt shell. In form, they resembled crustaceans made from polished chrome. Tendrils of silver cable hung from them, making them look like the fresh catch from a sea of quicksilver. Incarnus slid them into the exposed mechanisms, fingers snapping the toothed ends of each tendril onto a different cluster of wires. The silver objects shivered and then pulled themselves into the mechanisms. Miss Madra watched them squirm into the cogs and wiring, wondering briefly what they were and who had made them.
"They are something complicated made to do something simple,"
said Incarnus, looking up at her. She felt the tingle of static on her scalp and snarled. He raised his hands placatingly.
"Sorry, your mind was almost shouting your question. Difficult to miss."
She composed her face and looked down at the device on her wrist.
"They are ready to transmit?"
Incarnus nodded.
"Of course."
"Good," she said, and looked up the shaft. Fokron was standing above the opening. He looked down at her as the stab beam touched his armor. Its hue was black in the direct light, but for a second she had seen scales sketched in blue and green across the plating.
"Ready and standing by," she said.
Fokron nodded, face expressionless.
"Go," he said.
Bab Bastion, the Imperial Palace, Terra.
"It is holding course for surface impact,"
Admiral Su Kassen called across the command chamber.
"A distance from the nearest vessel," said Arcamus.
Above him, the holo projection showed the Primogenia trailing fire as its engines pushed it deeper into Terra's orbit.
"2014 kilometers,
said a human officer. He nodded. Calculations sped through his thoughts.
"They're still too close," he said.
"Get them clear."
The quiet of the chamber had vanished. Amber light flashed. Distances and velocities spun through the holo displays. Ships, stations, and shuttlecraft blinked back at him in cold light. Every officer in the room was speaking, calling information and orders over each other. The servitors were rocking and rattling in their cradles, fingers dancing over systems. The tech priests stood amongst them, twitching as they and the machines flooded their synapses with data. And above them, the image of the Primogenia fell down and down through the dark.
"Reason of truth confirms it has range and lock on the target. Orbital rotation bringing it above the horizon in 35 seconds. Ganymus defenses have firing solution. I have request for order to fire. Minimum safe distance. A reactor of that size. Target 3 seconds away from the medial orbital layer. Still no reply signal from the bridge."
It had been 41 seconds since they had come to full alert. But in the compressed instant of Arcamus's awareness, it felt like the blink of an eye. He could hear each voice in the chamber, and his eyes and mind were reading data from the displays faster than the tech priests and humans could process it. He saw and understood it all. The Primogenia might have suffered a catastrophic accident. Its crew might have overcome the pilot carder and set the ship to crash into Terra's surface. There were dozens of possibilities, and none of them mattered. The ship would die before it touched Terra's atmosphere. Its reactors and fuel would stain the sky for a few moments. Those other ships close by might suffer superficial damage, but no more. That was the cruelty of necessity, and, to the Praetorians of Terra, acceptable.
"Signal the reason of truth,"
he said. The sound dimmed for an instant, and then a voxlink crackled into life.
"The reason of truth stands ready,"
came a voice like a growl of thunder.
"This is Arcamus. I speak with the Praetorian's voice."
"We hear and obey, Arcamus. What is your order?"
"Last vessel is approaching outer edge of target ship's reactor explosion radius,"
buzzed one of the tech priests. Arcamus blinked, watching the Primogenia fall.
"Fire,"
he said. There was a pause as the signal reached up to the reason of truth, and then the warship fired. It was a battlecruiser, and its weapons could break star fortresses. But for this execution, it used a fraction of that strength. A pulse of turbo laser fire struck the Primogenia's engines an instant before macro shells ripped into its hull. The unstable plasma cylinders and explosive compounds hidden within the crates packed into its holds detonated. The fire ripped across the heavens like the burning laughter of a cruel god. Damocles Starport Terra. The gas flowed up through the branches of Damocles Starport's ventilation system. Colorless and odorless, it poured through every duct and trunk. The first to breathe the gas in was a man in one of the labor pens. He straightened from where he crouched over his workbench and tried to shake the pain in his neck. It was not good. His father had suffered pain in the same place before he had begun to waste from the inside. It might not mean the same thing, but the man knew it did. He was sure. He just didn't know what to do about it. He took a breath. He coughed. Those nearby did not look around from their workbenches. They never did. Others had died at their stations, and no one even turned a head. Not their business how each other lived or died, as long as they did not interfere with each other's work. The man coughed again. Something was tickling in his throat. Another cough. The pain in his neck was suddenly much worse. He brought his hand up to rub at it and froze. Something was moving under his skin. Something with legs. He yelped and brought his hand away. The skin of his arm was bulging as he looked at it. He shrieked. Shapes flowed up the limb. Some of the others turned to look. The skin of his fingers split before his eyes. Feelers and legs reached out from beneath. He shrieked again and ran, tearing at his flesh. The bugs were everywhere, running over the floor. More poured from the mouths and eyes of those who turned to look at him. Their skin was coming off, peeling back from a mass of brown, clicking bodies. His hand found a metal bar, and he swung and swung. As the first blow landed, another person's world exploded into nightmare, then another, and another, and so it went on and on, with each poisoned breath of air, as fears and desires buried down beneath sanity and obedience rose up and became real. Within 10 minutes, half of the population was screaming. Within 20, the starport was howling as it tore itself apart. Down in the cavern, where the cargo crawler had dumped its payload into the air, the masked figures worked quickly. The communication systems for the port were beyond their abilities to subvert or damage, but the speaker horns mounted throughout the structure were a different matter. As the gas flooded through the levels above, the speakers began to proclaim a single message again and again. We have come for you. Northern Circuit, the Imperial Palace, Terra. The three infiltrators broke cover as the siren sounded and began to sprint up the tunnel towards the distant daylight at the top of the ramp. There was no way of avoiding this moment. For all their stealth in coming this far, they could only take this last step in the open. A gun servitor barred their path, its heavy bolters armed as targeting beams reached from its eyes. The first stalker round punched through its targeting lens and blew out the back of its skull. A second and third round tore chunks out of the exposed flesh of its neck. The trio of infiltrators were already past the servitor as it fell. A blast door began to drop across the passage. They rolled beneath, came up and kept running. Another servitor shrugged free of its niche in the passage wall. They put a cluster of rounds into it and vaulted over its body as it collapsed. Sirens boomed through the air. They could see the daylight was getting closer. The walls shivered as armored doors slammed down across openings to either side. Lights cut out. Their visors switched the darkness to monochrome twilight. They had 5 seconds before the scanning beams flooded the passage. Their feet rang on the stones beneath their feet. The palace's guardians would know they were here within minutes. As long as those defenders were not busy elsewhere, of course. Dome of Illumination, the Imperial Palace, Terra. The Imperial Fists squad swept into the Dome of Illumination. There were 12 of them. Their left shoulder pads were bare iron. Black lightning bolts marked their chests. Veterans, thought Silonius as he watched them. They were good. Very good, in fact. The squad split, trios of warriors running in different directions, vanishing through doors to other parts of the palace. Now there were just three on the walkway. One of them had a portable Auspex in his hand. Silonius could almost feel the sensor waves reaching for him, itching across his skin. They moved as one, firing arcs overlapping seamlessly as they ran along the walkway, eyes and bolt guns sweeping the vast chamber. They had not seen Silonius, but they would. It was only a matter of time. Unless... Light flashed through the opening in the dome above, brilliant white, blinding, strobing. The Imperial fists looked up, and then froze, staring at the fire pouring from Terra's sky. The sirens screamed louder and shifted in tone. Silonius triggered the charges he had attached to the underside of the walkway. Stone and metal became smoke and flame. One of the Imperial fists vanished in the explosion. A section of the walkway broke away from the chamber wall. Another yellow-armored warrior went with it, spinning end over end down into the dark. The last of the squad was blasted backwards off his feet, hit the walkway floor and rolled. Silonius swung down from the ledge above and stabbed with a shard blade as the warrior came to his feet. It was a good blow, a killing blow, smooth and precise. But the Imperial Fist's legionary was fast and was not used to dying. The point of Silonius's blade glanced across yellow armor, and the warrior was up and ramming his gun into Silonius's chest. Force shuddered through Silonius's ribs and flesh. They were so close that he could see his reflection in the green lenses of the warrior's helm. He twisted aside as the gun roared. A cone of flame skimmed his side. He cut as he moved, once, twice, three times. Blood sheeted down. The warrior's left arm sagged. Blood was pouring from the inside of the elbow and wrist. And suddenly, Silonius found that he was smiling. The sirens were a drumbeat. Everything was a blur, but everything was also so clear. The Imperial Fist stepped back. Silonius moved with him, blade flicking out, and more blood gushed as the blade opened joins in wrist, elbow, and knee. The bolt gun fell from the legionary's hands. Silonius wondered for an instant what it must be like for such a warrior to feel strength flee him, what it was like to feel one's inferiority. It had always been like that for those who thought themselves strong or gifted when the legion laid them low. The worst moment was not dying, but realizing that there were others who were better. The legionary came forwards, shedding blood. Silonius lunged once. The point of his shard dagger took the warrior in the throat. The body twitched once, hands grasping nothing. Silonius let the dying warrior hang for a second, and then kicked him off over the edge of the walkway. He flicked his blade clean and felt a stab of pain in his left leg. He looked down. He was bleeding. A long splinter of stone had pierced his thigh. He looked at it, frowning at the fact he had not felt it before. He pulled it out. Blood pulsed briefly in the wound, then began to clot. He dropped the splinter, glanced around and found the doorway he needed. He began to run. There was no need for stealth now. Chaos was his cloak, and all that mattered was speed.